Blog Talk Radio.
Patrick Kane able to filter it across. Ryan Suter has it there. Threw one that rattled around behind. Pavelski there. Puts one in front. Kane a shot off of him. They score! That's crazy!
To LaFontaine. He gets tripped up. Gets it to May. And over the line. Here's May going in on goal. He shoots. He scores!
Is looming and ends tomorrow at 3 p.m. So this episode will be entirely dedicated to the trade deadline. We'll also hop into some playoff picks as well as a few other things. But without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to my co-host, the man who can drink a 40 faster than John Belushi himself, Mr. Chris McRae. How's life on the West Coast?
Sunshine every day, and I'm absolutely living it up.
I bet. Spring break.
Spring break. Next week.
Spring break. All right. It's April. This is going to be the end of the trade deadline. Trade deadline comes tomorrow. No more trades until summer.
No more.
You said it yourself a little while ago that there have been way more trades than you were expecting to come this spring. And to be honest, you're right, dude. There's just so much going on, and there were so many teams that were sort of on the fence, whether they were buying or selling, et cetera. And it's going to be interesting to see who's out there, who's still out there, and who's still trying to dump some salary and start the rebuilding process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was interesting seeing the teams that were sellers, and we had a feeling they would be sellers going into it, how much they're actually selling right now. Teams like Buffalo and Dallas. And, I mean, they've just completely redone their teams, and Calgary too as well.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of Buffalo, how many of they've traded three of their defensemen in the last week, correct? Something like that. They traded Leopold and Regier. Someone
else. I think that's it.
Oh, no, I was talking to you about Aeroff, whether they'd move Aeroff or not. So that's probably where I was getting the third guy from. Well, since we're on Buffalo, who else do you think is going to be on the move with that? Because they're not good. They're not doing it. They're not making the playoffs this year.
They've been shopping Pominville and Stafford, and then a name that keeps coming up that I don't think it's going to happen is Ryan Miller.
If they want to rebuild, they have to keep him.
Yeah, I agree, but his name just keeps coming up, and I don't see him getting moved. I see Luongo getting moved way before he does, just because of more bang for your buck and whatnot. So.
Well, yeah, and also, like I said before, if they're rebuilding, they have to keep him because they're going to have to get a younger guy to come in, and they're going to need an older, better veteran like Miller to teach this guy the ropes, how to play. And there's such a small market for goalies right now that it would be. I can't see it happening. I see Kiprusoff getting moved before I see Miller getting moved.
Oh, of course. If he's not getting moved, he's just going to retire at the end of the year, I have a feeling. But another name that's come up a couple of times is Ben Bishop, too, because of their other goalie, not Anderson, but I want to say Regier, but it's not. It's, I don't know, he's in net tonight.
I'm in Leonard.
But, Yeah. But can you imagine them trading Ben Bishop and how many teams are out there actually looking for a goalie with Ben Bishop's skills?
Right. Imagine if he went to Florida, just they have two goalies, just two massive goalies.
Yeah, oh, he's not going to Florida.
No, it was
not with Mark Sherman there.
It's just a joke. It's just a joke. Relax yourself. Relax over there.
I'm a Devils fan. I need a goalie.
No, you're all about, that's all you need. All you need is a goalie. Well, we've had some huge moves in this past week, specifically the Penguins. Basically, with the moves that they made a statement that it's Stanley Cup or bust. And they picked up Iginla, they picked up Morrow, and they picked up Iginla with a lot of people thinking, you know, they picked up Morrow, so they're not going to go after Iginla. And what do you know? He's there in Pittsburgh playing now.
Lo and behold, he ends up in Pittsburgh playing before Sidney Crosby goes down.
Now, I don't understand what the stipulations were between Pittsburgh and Boston and why that fell through, or was it just that Jerome wanted to go to Pittsburgh and not to Boston? Or did he?
Yeah,
and,
from what I heard, they had agreed to a deal with Boston, and then went to check with Jerome, who has the no trade clause, and they had a deal on for both of them, but they wanted the Boston deal, and he said no, he doesn't want to go to Boston, he wants to go play with Crosby. So now he's in Pittsburgh.
Well, now he's not even playing with Crosby because he is out indefinitely with a broken jaw.
Mm-hmm.
You think that's going to have any sort of, I mean, Lance said it best, and I hate to say this because he said this during fantasy hockey because he wanted to draft Crosby, and he was between him and Henrik Lundqvist, and I guess it was a bad decision now that you look back at it. But it's amazing that I can look at those two players and pick between two of them and say one is a bad decision, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he was saying back in January when we did our fantasy draft that he didn't want to draft Crosby because he's too injury-prone. Do you think this is going to have any long-lasting effects on Crosby with his concussion history? I know it's a broken jaw, but it's still part of your head.
They don't say that there's concussion syndromes right now, but you never know. He's played two or three games, and then they've come up after getting hit to the head. So
always, yeah.
It's one of those things.
Yeah, always. Now that we're still on the subject of the Penguins, they also picked up Brendan Morrow last week. And I don't know what it is, but there's something that they must have roofied everyone in the Dallas Stars organization over the past 2 years and forced them to make trades, because it's unbelievable what Ray Shiro's getting away with. Unbelievable. It's like he's getting away with murder.
Yeah, I mean, he's just been a wizard this year, getting really good at
This year. It's just you go back to when they acquired Neil. They got Neil and Niskanen. They got Neil and Niskanen from Dallas
Going back to 09 when they got Bill Guerin right before they made the playoff run to win the Stanley Cup. That was a great acquisition for him.
Right. And now they pick up Morrow for next to nothing. And I don't know, what were the trade negotiations for Iginla?
It was just those two
prospects.
And a first-round pick. So they gave him the 2013 first-round pick and Kenneth Agostino and Ben Hawisky.
You know, it's funny. A lot of people were saying when they made that trade, you know, who's this kid that goes to Yale? Who is this kid that, like, we're trading our captain away for these kids? I don't even know who these kids are. Lo and behold, I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, I may have read this wrong, but the kid that they traded for that plays at Yale scored the game winner against number 2 Minnesota in the college hockey finals just recently.
Yep. Yeah, I actually watched that game, and he he can play. The kid was definitely one of the best players on the ice that night, and looked like he could skate circles around a lot of those players. So,
dude, quick. He's quick, and he's nice. He's got a nice combination of size, speed, and strength, and he uses it all evenly. So that's nice. That's good for him.
I still don't think that they probably should have got more return for Ginla.
Oh yeah.
At the same time, you know.
At the same time, Ray Shiro's just on a roll, and when he's like when he's going on a trade bender, just let him go, let him do his thing.
Mm-hmm.
He'll do anything and everything to persuade you, and he will get what he wants. Another move made today. Since Ginla did not go to the Bruins, they needed to make up for it somehow, and they did, I think, by signing aging veteran Jaromir Jagr, trading for aging veteran Jaromir Jagr. Do you think, now we got into a discussion about this last week with Chandler, and the difference between Ginla and Jagr as goal scorers. Do you think this, how much of a downgrade or upgrade do you think having Jagr is?
Well, he's not going to be as physical as Ginla will be for Pittsburgh. But Jagr definitely brings a set of skills that the Boston Bruins need, which is, you know, playing that power play quarterback, and he can still shoot the puck with the best of them, and he's still got hands for days, and he knows how to find the back of the net. So Boston gets a player that, yeah, they would have liked to have a Ginla over Jagr. But
that's what I'm saying. In comparison to a Ginla, how much of a downgrade or upgrade is having Jagr? I know he brings a certain skill set, but...
Well, he's going to do two different things. It's like comparing apples to oranges. Jagr is more or less strictly going to be a power play guy for them because of the players that they have on their two top lines. He probably will fit in maybe with instead of Horton or play with Lucic or somebody, but he's gonna be strictly power play in my estimations. But Ginla would have been able to play an all around game, which he does extremely well. So it's hard. Ginla would have been a better pickup, obviously.
Yeah. Another thing, and now that I'm thinking about this, is when Jagr, besides for when he was playing on Pittsburgh, when he played in Washington and when he played in New York, he was always the go-to guy because he had the highest skill set on the team, and that was without a doubt. Even when he was in Pittsburgh, you could make an argument for him that he had one of the highest skill sets on the team when it comes to making plays and scoring goals, that is. Mm-hmm. And now when he's in Boston, who else besides Jagr has that same sort of dangling, sniping, scoring, offensive-minded skill set that he has? No one.
Sagan, I guess, but he's also had a down year this year.
There's one on this team, this Boston team, that has the same offensive skill set as Jagr, and that's a good place for him to be in because every time he's been on a team like that, he's flourished point-wise.
Well, he'll be one of their main go-tos. At the same time, he's not going to have to carry the entire team. He's there to score goals and to get points on the board, but he's not – the team is built defensive first. So with his offensive help, it just adds to their entire team depth.
Now, what other needs do you think that the Bruins need to fill to make this a successful trade deadline, to make another successful trade deadline acquisition and really get what they need to make a nice run in the playoffs?
Well, with the Chris Kelly injury, Jagr will probably go in and play most of his minutes on the third line with them and fill in for Chris Kelly. Ryan Clough would have been a really nice pick for them, in my opinion. But New York beat them to the punch. But They just need depth and players that are willing to buy into the team system and, you know, not – they don't need another top-line guy. They need one of those guys that are going to come in and their lunch pails and play Bruins hockey, a physical, hard-hitting, penalty-killing player.
What about on the defensive end? Do you think that they need anything on the defensive end? Because if you go back to the year that the Bruins made their cup run and they won the cup, they added a defenseman in Caberle. And I think when they made that acquisition for him, it really helped the Bruins because that year they had the worst power play, and it really helped them not so much shored up, but I at least get it going so it was respectable. Do you think the Bruins need to make a move on the back end to really solidify things?
It would definitely be a help. They are a little weak, especially for the power play. They would love to get a Dan Boyle probably and solidify that, especially with McQuaid going down to injury. But, yeah, I mean, depth never hurts a team, especially when you're trying to make a playoff run. And they would love to get a puck moving. You know, a Marc-Andre Bergeron, who got picked up by Carolina, would have been a nice fit for them as well. You know, play third-line defense and play on some power play minutes.
Yeah, so that really sucks seeing McQuaid go down like that. I love that pool. He's just such an in-your-face physical defenseman. I love the big bruisers, dude. They're so awesome. And how about Carolina, since you just mentioned them? I mean, they haven't made a big splash, but they're sort of right on the cusp of making the playoffs. They're only 3 points out.
They're really waiting for Cam Ward to come back to really make a long, run at it. And I don't know exactly how much longer he's going to be out, but they've definitely put themselves in the position to just squeak in and then make a run for it because of their acquisitions of Semin and Jordan Staal over the offseason. They're really starting to hit stride. Skinner's starting to score again for them and has been healthy, you know, knock on wood for his sake. But Eric Staal is, you know, one of the best players on their team, and he consistently puts up points for them. So,
dude, Eric Staal is a beast. He is a straight beast.
Mm-hmm. Very underrated.
If you had to pick one player that he like an all-star that he would represent, who do you think he would be? That he plays like, more like, sorry.
Wait, repeat that question?
If you picked a guy that Eric Staal played like, for instance, this is just an example. Eric Staal plays like Gretzky. Eric Staal plays like Jari Kurri. Who do you think he would be like in comparison?
Without the size, maybe an Eric Lindros. Or, I mean, he's just...
Really?
You know,
Eric Lindros?
He's just... He has that physical side to his game that doesn't get as much credit, but he's not the biggest player, so it's not... He's not... I don't want to say he's like Eric Lindros, but he does those little intangible things that Lindros did for Philly and Quebec.
Rangers. He had all his concussions in Philly, and then he decided, I'm just going to fall off the face of the earth.
Yeah, well, he can thank Scott Stevens for that, and he probably still hasn't talked to him yet.
That is true. You know, if I had to make a comparison to Eric Staal, and this is a little bit of a stretch because he's so young in his career, he reminds me of like a Mark Messier. Just the way he plays and the way he leads a team.
Yeah.
For instance, last year, he still put up 70 points last year, and he was a minus 20. And this year, he's totally bounced back. He's got 38 points in 34 games, and he's plus 14.
Yeah, he definitely has that leadership quality as well. And that's probably a much better comparison than mine, but...
Eric Lindros.
No, I did like Chandler's a couple of weeks ago when he compared Rick Nash to an Eric Lindros. That was really good.
What's that?
When Chandler compared Rick Nash to an Eric Lindros. That was what I thought was probably better.
I mean, as good as Ricky Nash is, he still has that little girly, chippy side where if things aren't going his way, i.e. the Kopechki hit, he'll act like a little girl.
Yeah.
And Eric Lindros was definitely notorious for that.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I wanted to go back to this. I meant to talk about this when we were talking about the Crosby injury. Fleury's out again, and Bocoon's playing. And you said this at the beginning of the year, that that was going to be a huge pickup for the Penguins. Because Bocoon is still capable of having a starting job, and he took a backup job in Pittsburgh, basically because he wants to win a cup. Everyone wants to win a cup, but that's got to be it, because this dude's got two shutouts in two consecutive games, and he's just playing unbelievable hockey for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, they don't lose a beat when he's in there, and he's a 1A. You know, he's right there knocking at the door to be, you know, half Larry's job, and that's definitely a part of their success this year, you know, winning the 16 games in a row or whatever they won now, you know, not losing a beat with the goaltender. I mean, look who they had in net last year, you know, Brett Johnson or whatever.
Yeah, and got to
they,
knock out
you know,
Rick
it's kind
DiPietro.
Of a step down compared to Fleury, who had to pretty much carry them. And you could see it wear on him towards the end of the season. You know, he wasn't playing at the best just because they couldn't afford for him not to be on the ice, you know. So
uh-huh.
now that Bocoon's there, it just there's that confidence, and you can see them, and it doesn't look like there's much stopping them.
Yeah, and now that we're back on the subject of Pittsburgh, who just acquired Jerome Iginla, if you're just tuning in, they also the Flames also traded Bouwmeester to the St. Louis Blues. The Blues also picked up Jordan Leopold. And I think it's safe to say, and this is coming from the words of the hockey guru, Chris McRae himself, they have the nicest defensive core in the NHL.
Well, it's hard not to beat them when they have, you know, Kevin Shattenkirk, who's one of the, you know, rising defensemen of the league, as well as Alex Pietrangelo, who is, you know, an absolute stud. And
oh,
then
yeah.
now to pair them with Jay Bouwmeester, and I know Jay Bo hasn't, you know, had the best record, and a lot of people give him shit for whatever, but he's the Iron Man of the league right now, playing, you know, most consecutive games. The dude does not miss a shift, and
well, you know,
plays, you know, 25 minutes a game.
If you think about Bouwmeester, if you think about Jay Bouwmeester, and when I was mentioning the Wade Redden thing before, that's kind of what he reminds me of. He had a couple good seasons in Florida, and then a Canadian team, Calgary, who's crazy about their hockey, obviously, goes out and signs Jay Bouwmeester and expects huge things. And I think he's got the same thing that happened with Wade Redden. He can't play in a big market. Can't do that.
Yeah, well, he was asked to do too much, and he might have put up a couple of big seasons for Florida, but they didn't really have anybody anyway, so he might as well have, you know, it's not ridiculous to see him, you know, almost leading his team in points when they were that bad. But dude's never even been in a playoff game, so it'll be interesting to see how he reacts to that, but to be on a line with, you know, either Pietrangelo or Shattenkirk is just going to help them progress as players in general. And
yeah.
especially if he plays with the Shattenkirk, allow Shattenkirk to do his offensive wizardry and, you know, just play that solid, you know, backup, you know, stand at the blue line and make sure nobody gets behind you kind of defense. And, he's going to fit in well. And then even Leopold will fit in well, too. And they didn't really give up much for him, but
Oh, no.
He's not also, he's not on the level of J-Bo.
No, obviously. And Jay Bouwmeester is an unbelievable puck-moving defenseman. And like you said, they didn't even give up that much for him. For Jordan Leopold, they gave up a second-round pick in 2013 and a fifth-round pick in the same year. And for J-Bo, they gave up a first-round pick and two prospects, one of them being a goalie, but goalie is the their least concern in St. Louis.
Yeah.
Least concern in St. Louis.
How interesting is it that Jake Allen has been the best goalie for St. Louis this year, considering that they came into the season with Halak and Elliott?
Yeah.
What?
How amazing is that? They get Halak, and he goes down to injury, and Elliott steps up and just dominates. And then this year it's Jake Allen. There's got to be a year that Halak's going to step back into it and say, you know, I kind of want to play hockey.
But even they traded Ben Bishop away last year. And it's like, why do you have so many good goalies when the Devils have only Martin Brodeur and Keith Kincaid? You know what I mean? Like, where are the other teams? You know, why aren't they drafting these players?
you're so butthurt about the Devils getting rid of Brodeur soon. I see it. Why do you have so many good goalies? The Devils just have Brodeur. I just don't understand it. I don't understand it.
Why we haven't been, but at the same time, Lou's got to see the end of the tunnel. You know what I mean? You know, Brodeur's not going to play forever.
Yeah, maybe
he might never know.
Maybe the Devils and Blues will talk. And they'll figure out a way to get Chris Terreri back in a pair of pads and put him between the pipes. So now that I just pulled up the Blues depth chart, since we're still on the subject of the Blues, they're just if you look at their top six defensemen: Jay Bouwmeester, Petrangelo, Roman Polak, Chris Russell, Shattenkirk, and Backman. Or Jackman,
Can I get a statement here? Chris Russell is having one of the most underrated seasons this year as well. And then Roman Pollock been playing with him, and he's been that steady rock next to him. They are absolutely.
Dude averages 20 or so minutes a game.
Every single one of them so stacked on the blue line is absolutely ridiculous.
I guess someone rung the doorbell. That was weird. I don't know what that was. Anyways, he's been unbelievable for them. He's been playing 20 or so minutes a night, averaging about 20 minutes a game, and the dude's on the positive side of things, so you know he's doing a lot of good things on the ice. And that's not, I mean, coming from Ranger Nation, I know you don't want to hear, and no one wants to hear anything about Wade Redden, but that's their top six minus Wade Redden, and he's been playing great hockey for them also.
Yeah, because he's not being asked to do too much, and he's just been able to play that eating himself role, you know what I mean?
Have you ever seen a picture of Roman Polak's mug? he's got this half goatee thing going on with a chin strap. I don't think I've ever seen any. That must be something. It must be European, because I've never seen anything like that in my life.
Eastern European.
It's got to be super. It must have been after a night of drinking. What the? So now that the Blues have their defense shored up for. It's just crazy looking at it. Now that they have their defense shored up. I think they have to make another move offensively, because although Chris Stewart's been really good for them this year and he's really stepped his game up, they don't really have anyone that stands out, that really stands out, out for them.
Tarasenko at the start of the year did, but they've also been decimated by injury, and they're starting to get a lot of their players back. TJ Oshie is coming back this week. Steen is coming back. McDonald's finally back. They just got a team, and I was really not that high on them last year. I wanted them to show me something, but this year I'm starting to really like their team, especially
yeah.
that Tarasenko, before he got injured, was absolutely lighting it up.
Yeah.
And they're defense first behind Ken Hitchcock, and they play much like an Eastern Conference team, and that will just absolutely take it to you. And, you know, David Backus isn't having a great year, but he's having, you know, a David Backus year. You know, he's going to score 15, maybe 20 goals at the end of the season, and he's just weighing the body.
Yeah. Hang on, we got a caller coming in. Hey, this is Charlie. Welcome to the Icebox.
Hey, what's up, fellas?
What's up, Chandler? How's it going, bud?
All right, how you doing, man?
Pretty good. Sorry, I kind of left you hanging there. We were just talking about the Blues and how they completely shored up their defense. And I think they still need to make a move offensively. Chris was saying, and it was a good point, by the way, that they're getting Oshie back. Tarasenko needs to find his game. What else do you think the Blues need to do to really solidify themselves as a cup contender? Because there's no arguing that their defensive core is next to no one in the league. And they definitely do need to find someone to step up on offense for them.
Yeah. I don't know if that move is out there for them to make without giving up a king's ransom at this point.
Yeah.
As far as another scorer. I mean, the guy, honestly, I think would be great for them is Vanek, and you're going to have to give up a lot to get Vanek.
That's a good point. I never thought of that. That is a good point.
Yeah, because, I mean, Buffalo's in the rebuild mode. Let's be honest. Buffalo's in rebuild.
Yeah,
and everybody can be had, including Ryan Miller. You can basically have anybody on their team as long as you're willing to give them back, you know, what they're asking for. But, I mean, outside of Vanek, who's really available that's the type of scorer that could come in and make an instant impact for St. Louis?
Mm-hmm. What do you think the asking price for someone like Vanek would be?
I'd say two firsts, a quality defenseman young one and a quality forward young one. I mean, you're looking at giving up, say, out of your top five prospects, say, you know, 1 through 5, you're looking at giving up two firsts and at least prospects 3 and 5.
Wow,
your
really?
Top five prospects because, you know, Vanek is, I mean, he's a scorer and and scorers are at a premium.
Yeah, and I guess that does make sense because this time of year you can pretty much ask for whatever you want. It's just the person that's willing to pony up for it.
Yeah, I mean, look what they got for Morrow. I mean, not really Morrow. That's a bad analogy because Pittsburgh has just been raping Dallas. look at Bomeister. Look at Leopold. Even look at Regier. I mean, you know, Regier's a good defenseman, but was he really worth that package?
Yeah, that's true. That is true. I actually really like. I really like that trade, though. I think
that was a great trade.
Yeah, I think that was good for L.A. I don't think the second round pick in 2015 is. I mean, you should be slowly making your way out of rebuilding mode by that point.
Yeah, but you figure even if you're say middle of the pack with that second round pick. That's still,
yeah.
If you've got good scouts. I mean, look at what Gordy Clark has done with some of the Rangers picks over the past few years. I mean, we haven't been in the top 10 in God knows how long when you talk picks. We've been middle of the pack, but he's been picking some really good players. So if you've got good talent evaluators, that pick can be, I mean, you know, can be a good pick. Ryan Clough was a sixth round pick.
Uh-huh.
You know, you look at some of these guys that are getting moved, and most of them weren't first round or even second round picks. They were third and fourth rounders. Who turned into really good NHL players.
Yeah. And we talked about this before. Jaromír Jágr and Chris brought up some good points about him coming to the Bruins. I asked Chris this same question. The Bruins thought they had a Ginla. How much of a downgrade or upgrade is it having Jágr instead of a Ginla?
I think for what they were going to be asking the player to do, it's a wash. because both guys were going to wind up being second, third-line guys. Aguilar's definitely third. Well, now he's probably second line now that, that Crosby's down. But Aguilar was going to go in as the third-line guy. Yager was, is going to go in as a third-line guy in Boston. And you figure a guy with their skill set on the third line against third-line players, you know, you know, that's a hell of an impact.
Yeah.
So, in reality, I think it's a wash. And Yager, for whatever reason, just seems to score more appearances. Again, you know, he just seems to, I don't know, he just seems to have a knack for getting the goals. You know, so I think Yager is actually a better fit for Boston than Aguilar would have been.
Yeah, I was saying this to Chris before. Even the teams that he used to play for, like the Rangers and like Washington, when he was the go-to guy, he seemed to flourish when he was really the only person on that team that had an elite offensive skill set.
Yeah, but if you look at where he's played, when he played it, even in Philly, that year, what was it, year, last year, before last in Philly, he put up some great numbers, and he really was not asked to put up a lot of numbers. He just wound up putting up the numbers because he didn't, you know, there was no pressure on him. There was no attention paid him. Oh, he's 40 years old. What's he going to do? You know, the man can still skate. I mean, he can still outskate half, you know, kids half his age. And he still has one of the best shots in the game.
Yep.
Well, yeah, I mean, the guy's got, he's, his the hands he has are ridiculous. It's like, it's comparable to, I mean, I can't say Datsyuk because he's just silly. But someone, even like Kovalev back in the day.
Yep.
Yeah. And you can't knock him off the puck. You still can't knock him off the puck because his base is still one of the strongest bases in the game. He, you still,
he's still
cannot knock him off the puck.
He's still
he's huge.
A big body when it comes down to it. You know, and it's hard for those big bodies, especially with the savvy that he has now being 40 years old and seeing everything. You know, he's been through the wars and, you know, he's just, he's going to add a lot of depth to that team as offensive-wise, and that's something that they lack.
He gives them a legitimate third line that can score now. They can roll three legitimate lines out there and expect scoring on all three lines. You know, and then when Horton gets hurt, when Nathan Horton gets hurt again, which he will, I'm not saying it to knock the man, but he gets hurt. Every year he gets hurt. You know, you got a guy who can step in and you know, keep the scoring going.
Yeah.
Him getting hurt, though, he got blindsided by Aaron Rome in the playoffs, so that's not his fault.
No, I know it's not his fault. He's just kind of one, he's kind of that bad luck guy. You know, it's like
every year it's
something.
I understand, but it's just the fact that he wasn't even looking at the ice and he got completely blindsided by a player and, you know, he got laid out, but that was not his doing.
No, that's not even fair. That's not even fair. That was like, that hit reminded me of the Scott Stevens Paul Kariya hit where he's just laying on the ice.
Exactly,
didn't know what's that?
Yeah, just sleeping on the ice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a nice hit. I still see that hit. That hit was beautiful.
While we're on the subject of Dallas, they also seem to be cleaning house, also trading Derek Roy to Vancouver. McRae, that makes them even more dangerous than they were before. But before we get into that, Dallas trades two of its top guys offensively, if you were looking at paper, Jaromír Jágr and Derek Roy. With those two guys gone, it's safe to say that they could possibly be in rebuilding mode. What do you make of possibly a Louis Erickson trade and maybe what his availability is?
I mean,
I like
him as like one of those leadership roles for the team moving forward. He's probably getting looked at and getting offers for him, but I think it's going to be harder for them to move him than it was for the other two players. Derek Roy just didn't seem to fit in with that, with the roster. And Louis Erickson's just one of those guys that is competing with anybody. So a lot of teams are going to want to look for him and see if they can persuade Dallas to move him as well. But at the end of the day, I think Dallas likes him as a leadership role so much.
I think with Erickson, he does better with a quality center. I can see them moving him, but I don't see the sense of them holding on to him, is I guess what I'm saying, because they've gotten rid of all of the quality, I mean, pretty much all of the quality offensive players they have, and I don't see him as a guy to carry the load. He's a great complementary player, but, you know, since he got those 36 goals, his goal totals have been going down because now he's being asked to score. He's being counted on to score, and his, you know, his goal scoring is going down. So I don't know. I can see them moving him if they don't believe that he can be a standard bearer going forward, and a lot of teams would jump on him because this guy would fit in with any quality center in the league.
Yep. I just don't know if they're going to do it this year. Maybe down the line, maybe next year, maybe in the off season. But this year, I don't know if there's enough teams out there willing to pay the price to get him.
What do you think an asking price for Erickson would be? Because like Chandler said, at this time of year, anyone's going to ask for a king's ransom. It's just who's willing to pay it.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think?
I don't think there's any teams out there that are willing to get, you know, pay the price that it is to get a Louis Erickson. I think if there's a team to do it, then they're going to have to give up, you know, a top prospect, you know, and probably a first rounder for him.
At least.
Like Chandler said, he's one of those top players, you know, that can fit in with anybody and play on a first or second line and be fit in seamlessly with a team that's trying to make a run.
This is sort of bringing up some deja vu for me, but tell me, what was the trade that you proposed to me yesterday for my boys on Broadway, the trade between the Rangers and Detroit? I forget who you got involved or who you wanted.
It was Gabrick and Gilroy for Vittori Coppola, Jordan Tutu, and forget the other player. There was another defense.
Ian White.
Oh, yeah, Ian White.
What do you think about that, Chandler?
No, absolutely not.
No?
If I'm not getting Damian Brunner in that trade, I don't make it.
What? Unless Damian Brunner's in that trade, you're not making it?
If Brunner's in that trade, I'm not making it because Brunner is going to be a good player. He's going to be a very good player in this league. A very good player. He's kind of hit the wall right now, but if you watched his game and watch him, he has tremendous skill, tremendous upside. And if I'm giving up Gabrick and I already can't score, I got to get some scores back. Jordan Tutu, please. You can have him. I can get a better defenseman than Ian White. I have better defensemen than Ian White, to be quite honest with you, in the minor leagues. It's just that there's no point in bringing him up because Tortorella won't play him. You know, Ian White is you know, a third line D. Well, my team, he's a third line defenseman on my team. He's not better than any of my top four. So you got to get
I was just thinking about that because he brought up Vilppula, or he brought up bringing up Erickson. He's just a versatile player and he can really adapt and play with anyone. And he mentioned the same thing about Vilppula. If you did make that trade, where would he fit on our lineup and who would he play with if we're trading Gabrick away? Because that would be the one person I'd want Vilppula to play with.
Right, exactly, and that's my point. Is that's why I said Brunner's got to come in that trade. I actually don't think Vilppula is a good fit with the current Rangers team based on the coach and the style they play.
Yeah.
I can see him being been, you know, jerked around just like Gabrick has been.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you think, and I've been talking about this for 3 weeks now, and Magri's going to laugh every time I say it, do you think that they're going to pull the trigger and make a trade to get rid of Gabrick?
I hope not, but I can see them doing it. I can see them being short-sighted in doing it. The man has scored goals for us. He scored big goals. He's had, we've had, what, three, four good, really good seasons out of Marion Gabbert. He's only been hurt, what, twice? When everybody said, oh, he'll be hurt every year. His groin, he's having a groin. He hasn't had the groin pulls. The injuries he's had have been major injuries that he's tried to play through and everything else. Marion Gabbert has done everything that's been asked of him by the New York Rangers and then some. I think to trade him would be short-sighted. But
yeah.
I kind of got a feeling that if he doesn't go this trade deadline, he's going in the offseason.
Yeah. I mean, he's only got 1 year left on his contract.
Who would you like to get in return for him, though? Player like Vanek right now, just because we brought him up earlier. Would you trade him heads up for Gabbert?
Vanek?
They're more or less the same player. They're both scorers, both streaky scorers at that.
Yeah.
But...
No, Gabbert, you got to get back top-level prospects and some draft picks. I don't want a player back. I want you know, two of your best young players. I want at least one first rounder and a couple of second rounders for Gabbert. I don't want a player back. I want to stock up on some more young players so that if I do have to flip some young players for somebody else, I'm really, you know, it's a wash when it comes to talent in my pipeline.
Well, what do you think the Rangers could get for Gabbert? Because you can't, the way he's playing this year, you're not going to get two prospects, a first-round draft pick, and a second-round draft pick.
That's the problem is because of how he's been used, they've actually, Tortorella's actually devalued him.
Yep.
And I think right now, honestly, I think the best you could hope for in terms of draft picks is a second-rounder. I think that's the best you could hope for is a second-rounder and maybe some mid-tier prospects for Gabbert right now. I think that's the best you could get.
I think you may be right.
Well, you could get a legitimate prospect, and then like a second rounder as well, maybe a first event for the right situation that he's going into. But like you said, he's definitely been devalued this year. You know, especially with Nash coming to the team, he just hasn't had the offensive skill set to back it up.
Well, I mean, you've got a career right winger who you've asked to play left wing. And then you gripe about the fact that the man is not scoring. He's learning a new position, a position he's never played. I mean, even Ovechkin struggled at the beginning of the season when they flipped him to the other side. He's starting to come on now, but he's a little younger and a little more talented than Gabbert, if we're being honest. You know, Marion Gabbert has been a right winger the majority of his career, and then this season, okay, you're going to play left wing. Really?
Yeah.
In a strike-shortened season, that's when you want to switch him to the off-wing?
That is true. That's a good statement. That's a good point. We all know how I feel about Tortorella's coaching strategies, but we'll save that. We'll save that one for another day. While we're
now
talking
about the Rangers, let's talk about Ryan Clough.
Yeah, now that we're on the topic of the Rangers, Rangers trade for just recently, actually happened about an hour ago, traded for Ryan Clough. Hold on, I'm bringing up the trade agreements here. Here it is. They said in return, the Sharks will receive the Rangers' second-round pick in 2013, their third-round pick that the Rangers attained from the Panthers, and a conditional pick in 2014. If the Rangers re-sign Clough or win two playoff rounds with him in this spring, that 2014 pick will be a second-round selection. If neither happens, San Jose gets New York's fifth-round pick. I really don't mind this trade because, one, we didn't give up a roster player, and two, he brings a lot of depth and he brings that size and grittiness to the Rangers and what they need. The only downside to it is he hasn't scored a goal this year. for a team that's offensively starved, but he's not coming in to fill the role of a goal scorer. He's coming in to fill the role of a depth player. And I think that's something that he could ultimately do, especially since we lost Prust via free agency this summer, as well as Dubinsky in the Nash trade. I think he's gonna make a big difference. The only problem is, and I was talking with Chris about this before Chandler, is where does he fit in the lineup and where is he going to play?
Where he should go is the third line with Zuccarello. Zuccarello is a wizard with the pass. He's a wizard. And in the past few games, just watch him. Every time he's on the ice, you know he's there. And every time he's on the ice, he has put guys in position to score, and they missed the shot. They shot wide. They let the puck bounce over their stick. They weren't ready for the pass. You get Ryan Clough and put him in front of the net with a passer like Zuccarello. Clough will flourish. Now, what's going to probably happen is he'll be on the line with Boyle and some other guy who can't pass. And everybody says, oh, he's still not scoring. You got to put players in position to succeed. And I don't think
about Duke, though. That's a good point. I thought Zouk would be, and hopefully this doesn't. Hopefully they end up keeping him. But I thought Zouk would play really well with Gavrik and maybe get Gavrik going a little bit.
Well, the last game, if you watched, when Zuccarello and Gavrik were on the ice, Gavrik got 5 shots last game. Primarily as a result of because they had him on around with Zuccarello for a little bit. He got 5 shots in the last game.
No, he didn't play a bad game. He just can't finish.
Well, again, he's not finishing, but he hadn't even been getting shots. I think playing with Zuccarello will get him more shots, and eventually the shots will go in. Even though this is the down year for Gavrik, because if you look at his career, every other year is his good year, and this is typically his down year. So, but I think Zuccarello will benefit whoever he plays with if he's given the minutes.
Yeah, that's true. I think if Zouk was put on a line with Richards and Gavrik, those two would definitely turn their game around at least a very little bit.
Yeah.
I think Clough, and Chris mentioned this before, I think a line of Ryan Callahan, Clough, and JT Miller would be super effective.
Yeah, but I think Miller or Kreider or both are going to be benched shortly based on Tortorella's comments about not trusting them.
Oh, yeah. I saw that recently. I don't think it's not so much that he doesn't – I think he, you're right. He doesn't trust them, but it's more of because he's got less trust for them now because the stakes are higher, and who put them in that situation?
Exactly, he did, because had he given them more time earlier in the season and allowed them to play through the mistakes, they would have more confidence now when they make a mistake and know that, okay, I made a mistake, I'm not going to get benched the rest of the game, so I can go out there and I can make up for the mistake.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You can't have guys so afraid to make mistakes that they never learn when they make a mistake because they don't get an opportunity to make up for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, these kids now, I looked at Miller. Miller's face the last game at Winnipeg where there was a faceoff, the Rangers lost it, and he was supposed to go to the point, and he didn't, and Winnipeg scored. And just look on his face was like, shit, I'm not going to play the rest of the game. And, you know, he got very little ice time the rest of the game. And he knew it. So how are you helping these kids? How are you helping them by, like, you make one mistake and you're done?
You can't do that with young kids. It hurts their development way too much.
I mean, you know, I look at Babcock. Yeah, was it Detroit got obliterated? Was it Sunday? They got obliterated.
Yeah,
he didn't pitch guys. He didn't juggle his lines. He rolled 4 lines. It's always because they're playing the next day. No, that's what he does. He doesn't just bench guys for making mistakes. Now, what he'll do if a guy's not playing well, he just won't dress them. But if if you're going to dress a player, play the player.
Yeah,
unless
it's only hurting
something
your team.
Ridiculous.
It's only you're hurting your team depth-wise, and and energy-wise if you don't play those players.
So, I mean, I like the Ryan Close signing, but I start wondering now who's going to not be in there that he could actually play well with. And, yeah, I think, Klo with the two kids would be a good line.
Yeah. You could do that. You could do, because JT Miller is a natural center, right?
Yes.
So you could do a line of JT Miller, Klo, and Kreider.
You got a veteran out there to help the kids. They feel comfortable because they got somebody riding shotgun that they know if somebody takes a run at him, he's got their back because he's not a small man. I mean, it's a win-win no matter how you look at it.
And, Chris brought this up before, and it was a really good point. I never really thought of it, but Klo brings that that intensity to the game. That he brings that physical presence that not so much an enforcer because we don't see him as an enforcer. Well, he brings that grinding effort, and he's not afraid to go out there and punch you in the face if he wants to punch you in the face.
Exactly. I didn't even realize this, but I was reading somewhere, I think it was on Yahoo, Stu Bickel is the Rangers' leader in penalty misses. That's all you need to know about the toughness on this team.
He's got more penalty minutes than time on the ice.
Exactly. And that's sad. I mean, Stu Bickel averaged about 3 minutes a night, yet he leads the Rangers in penalty minutes. Meaning he was the guy who was doing most of the hitting and the after the whistle stuff and then scrums and pushing guys and all the other stuff and clearing the crease. That's pretty doggone sad.
Yeah, that's pretty sad. I also noticed that, and Chris, correct me if I'm wrong because I'm sure you've noticed it as well, but they just – you look at other teams, you look at the Devils, right? If anyone is anywhere near Marty's crease, they are immediately in their face and that person is on their ass or they're getting face washed or they're getting fingers put in their nose or their mouth or whatever, a la Lucic.
Yeah, what's his name?
Nathan Horton?
No, it was who bit him? Who was the player that was biting him?
Was it Pacioretty?
Vancouver. No, it was Vancouver that was biting him.
Oh, Jason Raymond. Wasn't it Raymond then?
No, it was
it was Burroughs.
Yeah, it was Burroughs.
Yeah.
It was Burroughs.
Yeah.
But the Rangers they don't have that this year. If you look at other teams like the Devils, if you look at other teams, I mean, gosh, if you look at Columbus even, they know that if anyone's in the crease or anywhere near their goalie, that you're not supposed to be there. Get out. And they knock them on their ass. The Rangers haven't done that all year.
The Rangers haven't done
crazy,
that for a
crazy,
few years.
Crazy stat about the Rangers. They were top three in fighting last year. I think they're like 26th right now in the amount of fighting majors. It's just a huge drop-off to what they were – I don't want to say what they were known for last year, but there was that grittiness, that in-your-face kind of style that, we're not going to back down from anybody. And this year, yeah, they don't have the same players, Prust or Rupp, but it's just a huge transition for the identity of a team to switch like that.
Yeah, that is very true.
And that's, again, a function of the coaching staff because this guy has made it clear that he's not going to play guys whose game consists of, I'm not going to say strictly fighting, but whose game is built on toughness and intimidation, for lack of a better word. I mean, when you play Boston, you know one thing. Lucic is going to put you on your back at some point in that game. Whether he gets a penalty for it or not, he's going to put you on your back. You know this. You know that Chara is going to hit you. Whether he takes a penalty or not, they'll deal with it. They'll kill a penalty, but he's going to hit you and put you on your back and all those other things. And everybody knows the Rangers aren't going to do that. So everybody drives the net. They congregate in front of the net. I mean, hell, they have coffee. They have, they have little coffee clashes in front of the net because there's nobody going to hit them. Because if you hit them, then Tortorella won't play you. Or he'll trade you or he'll get rid of you. He doesn't have an instigator on the team. Aaron Asham is a quintessential instigator, and he's pretty much been neutered since he's got here.
He's been. That's exactly what has happened. He hasn't done anything, and he was brought in to play that kind of role that Press played last year, but Torch doesn't trust him and won't give him the ice time to do that, and that's his exact role.
The last time he played major minutes was the last time he got into a fight in that game. And since then, if you notice, his ice time has gone down. He's been in and out. They say, oh, he's hurt. But even since he's come back, he hasn't been playing. Darryl Powell, who was born here to be a penalty killer, didn't play for five games. How do you bring a guy in to specifically be a penalty killer and then not dress him?
That is at 100% on Mr. John Tortorello. We got a caller coming in right now. Welcome to the Icebox. This is Charlie. What's going on?
How's it going tonight, Charlie?
Is this Mr. Jason Kennedy Knox?
How you doing, my friend?
What is going on? Everyone from Sports City, I'd like to welcome back the man, the myth, the legend from the Great White North, Mr. Jason Kennedy Knox. Round of applause. Thank you for coming and showing up. How are you, bud?
I'm not doing too bad at all. I heard you guys are talking about Ranger hockey, and I thought I'd chime in for a little bit, or just hockey in general, but watching the Blue Jays play some baseball.
Oh, yeah?
And just hanging out and listening to you guys.
How about your boys from Michigan?
There's nothing better than the Michigan Wolverines, Charlie. It's just, that's a lifetime love I got, and they're going all the way to the Final Four. And Trey Burke, and oh man, I could go on and on about. I don't like the NBA, but I'm all in for college basketball. Michigan Wolverines, I love them almost as much as I love my Oilers. It's a good time right now.
All right. Since you are a hater of Calgary, what do you make of all the trades they've been making recently? Calgary specifically, the trades coming out of Dallas and the signing today with Jágr and the Bruins.
Well, plain and simple, the market is bleak, is it not? Nobody is emptying out the coffers to get talent. And, I mean, everybody kept trying to say in the weeks leading up to the trade deadline that it was going to be this seller's market, and everybody was going to be ripe with prospects. And, of course, the Ginla and Bomeister all been talked about up here for, you know, all year before the year even started, in the likes of Jágr, you know, coming along in the last couple of weeks, basically when Dallas has decided to throw in the towel, and Brendan Morrows. But the deal that should have tipped everything off to say that this was not going to be a seller's market was the deal for Brendan Morrow. I mean, Morrow's a captain. Morrow's a guy who's playing with grit. I know you guys are talking Rangers. Brendan Morrow's the type of guy that the New York Rangers need, but they obviously weren't going to make a deal like that. But and you saw what went back the other way, which is a prospect in Joe Morrow and another pick, and you thought, really, that's what you're getting for a captain to the Dallas Stars? Okay, that doesn't seem right. And then, of course, the Iginla deal goes down last week, and the Flames get absolutely really nothing in return, nothing that's going to create a buzz. Of course, you have the pick there, but, I mean, that really doesn't mean too much. Now, Jay Feaster's the guy who's making that pick, so how happy are you with that? But nevertheless... Nevertheless, there was a better deal on the table. If that deal would have went through with Boston, I would actually kind of tip my cap a little bit to Feaster, because that would have been a fairly decent deal. But Jerome Iginla really pulled the rug out from underneath Feaster's feet there, and not a lot of people are really giving Feaster a break on that deal. But the Jay Bomeister deal was just awful yesterday. I mean, there's two guys who are projected, one to maybe be a fourth liner, and, you know, who knows. And I'm not deep. I don't really delve too deep in the prospect. I'll leave that up to the geniuses, and I'll just do the reading on it every once in a while, but doesn't sound too great there either. But so that tells me, if you're going to make a deal and you got assets to get rid of, you're not going to get much in return if you got a player. And nobody wants, you know, prospects are prospects, and you don't know what you're going to have to the end. It's not like Columbus or Calgary is going to give up their first round pick this year for somebody when you know they're going to be a top five pick. It's bleak. It's just bleak, man. You're not going to see blockbusters. You won't see them till you won't see any blockbusters until draft time. And the days of the trade deadline blockbuster ended with the salary cap, plain and simple. That's when we used to see the big movement, and we don't see it anymore. And it's kind of disappointing, but the 8 hours of trade deadline coverage that we'll get on TV tomorrow will be the most boring television you will watch because all the big names are off the table. I'm kind of glad I have to work tomorrow. I won't be sad if I got to miss it.
Well, I don't know, Jason, if you can count the Pittsburgh deals because they seem to just be raping Dallas on a regular basis at this point. So I don't even know if you can even count those deals. I mean, they've been
throwing they added Brandon Morrow and Jerome McGinley, two captains
mm-hmm.
for nothing, absolutely nothing. And how big are they going to be? I know they're getting spanked kind of tonight, but I mean, listen, they've won 15 games in a row. They can have an off night. I know Sid the Kid won't play again until the playoffs, but they added two captains to the lineup. Don't tell me that doesn't ease the pain just a little bit. All of a sudden,
oh,
they're not looking over their shoulder, and all of a sudden, Chris Kunitz has to run the team. No, they got – or Tyler Kennedy. I mean, they got Jerome McGinley and Brendan Morrow, and they've been through the wars. And it's – I mean, you look at that, and all the first thing I think is Pittsburgh should win the Stanley Cup. But the second thing I think is we saw a pretty good hot team in Pittsburgh come into the playoffs last year, and it was between the ears of Marc-Andre Fleury where that team – lost the series against Philadelphia, and that's where it's going to lie once again. They got to shake that monster.
Well, they got Bocoon, though, and I think that with Bocoon, I don't think they'll have any problems sitting him down come playoff time. If Fleury gives even an inkling that he's about to give it up, I can see them. I can see him telling Fleury to go have a seat.
Yeah, I think it would have to be almost a repeat like performance, and Pittsburgh would have to fall behind, you know, a couple games in the series, kind of like they did last year. And Fleury not looking good at all. Of course, now he's got an injury situation right now, too. And does that linger? And do you roll into the playoffs with Bocoon as your number one? Because, to be honest, he's never really shot the lights out come playoff time either. Now, that being said, he hasn't had a team like Pittsburgh in front of him either. He had some pretty good defensive national teams, but he couldn't get over that hump.
If you think about it, the way he's been playing lately, and Chris said this best, so tip of my hat to you, buddy. The way that you can look at Fleury and Bocoon, because Bocoon, the way he's playing right now, he could hold down a number one job easy. And the way you should look at Fleury and Bocoon is basically like 1A and 1B.
You can, but Fleury's the guy. Fleury's the guy. Like, if Fleury's healthy, he's got to be the guy, or else you kind of start creating a rift in the dressing room. Bocoon went there to be the backup. And like they were saying, you guys were saying there just a second ago, if Fleury's not getting it done and the playoffs have got underway, you get a game or two in and it's not good, then you can go to Bocoon and you don't have to answer any questions. But if you start the playoffs, you just decide to go with Bocoon, it looks a little shaky and people might wonder what you're thinking. And even in the dressing room, I think that's kind of it's a little earthquake in there that can divide things. And when it comes right down to it, Fleury's the one who's helped take him to two Stanley Cups and won them one. And I know, like I said, he's got to shake the ghost of last year, but I don't think you can just hand it over to Bocoon. I think you have to go Fleury when he's healthy.
He's definitely the number one, and he's been the number one for a while, like you said. And he does command that locker room. You know, he grew up with Crosby and with Malkin and that entire, you know, that entire franchise. So you got to give him the number one spot. But just having Bocoon is like just – allows them to breathe a little easier, you know, instead of having Brett Johnson coming in, you know, serving, you know, if Fleury went down and, you know, have him serve for a couple games. It was kind of scary back then, but now he's, you know, at least there to be able to, you know, be that solid, you know, backup, you know, come in and play a couple games in a row and not have to worry about whether the goaltending is going to be there or not.
That's a great point, and I'll agree with you 100% there. That's the reason we haven't seen Roberto Luongo go anywhere this year as well. You got two teams, championship-caliber teams, who can kind of go to a 1A and 1B type goaltender. Now, Corey Schneider's not really playing that well as of late. Roberto Luongo's been, in my opinion, has been great this year, but people aren't saying it because people like to bash Roberto Luongo. But same type position. Vancouver is one of the quote-unquote favorite teams in the West, and they're going with a two-goalie system if they have to, and they're going to go with the one that's hot and takes them there. And it's always nice to know you got a goaltender to fall back on that can win you games. There aren't a lot of franchises out there come playoff time that can say that.
yeah, to have that luxury to be able to do that. The great thing about them, too, is they're, like, best friends in their locker room, too. So the them being, you know, 1A, 1B kind of thing, and it hasn't really hurt them because they have so much chemistry together. And, you know, Corey Schneider's grown up with the ranks of knowing that he's been Luongo's backup. So it hasn't hurt him to the extent of, you know, the fact that he's got to come in and, you know, play with Luongo and know that he has to give up some starts to him. So
the thing about it is they named Corey Schneider the number one at the beginning of this year, and it hasn't really gone his way. And he does look defeated. And I know we were talking Pittsburgh, but and just to flip it to Vancouver for a second, when the Oilers blitzed them for four goals in the first 7 minutes the other night, which was one of the greatest things in my eyes I've seen as an Oilers fan for 7 years, when it was like the Oilers saying, you know what, I think we're going to send a message tonight. Corey Schneider was awful. Roberto Luongo actually started awful in that game. But if anybody watched that complete game, and I may have been the only one probably in this conversation that did, I almost guarantee it, the Edmonton Oilers should have won that game 9-0, and that isn't even an exaggeration. Roberto Luongo made some saves that were so unbelievably sick after the game was 4-0, 7.5 minutes in, that, I mean, I can count three at the top of my head. He robbed Hemsky twice. He took one away from Piarvi. It was just unbelievable goaltending. But, of course, it doesn't get talked about because it was a 4-0 game, and Vancouver was getting pounded. But, boy, there's something about Luongo right now. I just get this feeling that he's ready to put a team on his back and win a championship. Now, I'm no Canucks fan, but I kind of get that feeling, even though they've been struggling as of late.
Oh, we know you're not a Canucks fan, Noxie.
You know, but I mean, I'm a Luongo fan. I am, and it's tough to – I mean, I'm going to get – you know when you're a fan of a player that's on a rival team and you try and have that conversation, when you try to have that conversation with, you know – I try to have that conversation with fellow Oilers fans, and I'm trying to explain how much I like Jerome Iginla, and they just, you know, that blind hate kind of escapes, and they can't wrap their head around it. And I try to explain, it's like, no, I love Roberto Luongo. I think he takes a lot of lickings, and I've given him some too. I thought he took a beating in the Stanley Cup Finals a couple years ago, and I think he deserves so in a lot of spots. But it's tough to have that hate when there's players on that team that you genuinely like and you want to see do well. But that being said, you mentioned Calgary, Charlie. Listen, the Oilers have been doing this for 7 years. Calgary, now, the best thing that could happen to them is if they get back on track, because the best thing for the Edmonton Oilers or the Calgary Flames is have the other team in your division and your biggest rival be just as competitive as you are. And to have one team going up and one team going down isn't good. I don't like to see teams like that. And it, even though it's Calgary, you know, okay, I'll take it this year. But get back on your horse, because I want this Flames-Oilers rivalry to get some buzz again. It hasn't had buzz for 20 years.
Right. Hang on, we got another caller coming in right now. Welcome to the Icebox. This is Charlie. What's going on tonight?
What's up, Charlie? It's Jamie from Hawthorne, New York.
Wow, Lufa calls in.
What's going on?
Lufa calls in. What's up, buddy? How are you following? You're following this trade deadline. We were just talking the trades between Calgary and Pittsburgh, Dallas and Pittsburgh, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sure you're excited about the Rangers' most recent pickup, Ryan Kloh. Why don't you give us a rundown, just tell us what's on your mind, what you think of a couple of the bigger trades you've seen this week.
Well, I think Jerome Iginla going to Pittsburgh just shows a message that Pittsburgh is not sitting on their laurels and they're ready to win another Stanley Cup. I mean, Malkin stepping up last year, especially being the league MVP, you know, really showing the world that he can lead this hockey team as far as he needs to go. With Crosby going down, I think the fan base is really energized still. I think Jerome Iginla and Brendan Morrow going to Pittsburgh is only going to make them more formidable down the stretch here. Kind of tough being a Ranger fan seeing that, but it's still going to be very intriguing come playoff time.
Oh, for sure, for sure. And what do you think about Kloh coming to the Rangers, and what do you think he's going to bring to the lineup?
I really like the trade. I think 2 second-round picks. I think the Rangers have been unwilling at the trade deadline to really pull the trigger the last 2 years. They've done a lot of their acquisitions through free agency. I think Ryan Clough is an interesting player. He's got pretty good size. He uses his body a lot, gets in front of the net, but a very underrated scorer on a star-studded San Jose Shark team that's had a lot of talent run through there. I think the Rangers just need to simply put the puck in the net. They play hard. They play good team defense, and we know about the goaltending. I think Ryan Clough is going to add a lot of depth to this team, and he's going to free guys up like Marian Gaborik, who are really feeling the heat and need to pick up the slack. I think Ryan Clough, the way he plays the game, is fit for New York, and I just think he's really going to be an impact down the stretch here.
Yeah, for sure. With him coming, if he can just come and sit in front of the net, you know by the end of the year, the Rangers will be giving Ryan Clough the Dan Perlowitz Golden Shovel Award.
Absolutely. We can take any way we can score goals is better off forever. It's because the Rangers, it's really frustrating watching this team play, grinding it out, playing good hockey, and then just being down 2-0 after the first period. A guy like Ryan Clough is going to score the ugly goals, but again, he's going to come down that wing on that 2-on-1. He's going to bury the puck. So I think Ryan Clough is going to fit in really nicely here. That's a trade that I really like.
All right. So we're coming up on about 15 minutes left. I wanted to go through real quick playoff picks, who's making the playoffs, just a quick assumption right before the trade deadline ends tomorrow, as well as a couple weekend awards. Chris, who obviously Pittsburgh's going to be in your top, they have to be in your top three for the East, but why don't you give me a rundown of the Eastern Conference, who's making it, and who just barely squeaks in?
Well, you definitely have Pittsburgh winning the Atlantic. You've got you got Pittsburgh winning the Atlantic. You've got, with Montreal picking up Yager, they might just leapfrog Montreal. It's going to come really down to one of the last three games. I have a feeling that they're going to start pulling it together. And then I've got Winnipeg winning the Southeast. They've just been kind of grinding away, going under the radar. Yeah, they only have 38 points, and even if they somebody Carolina comes and jumps over them, they're going to be out of the playoffs. So got Pittsburgh, Boston, Winnipeg. Then you would have Montreal, Ottawa, Toronto, and Rangers Devils. One of those two are going to make the playoffs. I don't know if both of them are making the playoffs this year. And don't sleep on the Islanders. They've really been starting to put it together and win a couple games in a row. So they're starting to heat up at the right time. So it's gonna be a dogfight.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Yeah, it's been very tough. Like, the points are at a premium this year. And every game means so much now. And that's why this pickup of Clough, I think is going to push us over. I think the Rangers are going to squeak in. I think the defense, the goaltending, I think we're going to do it.
I don't know. You sound like an optimistic Rangers fan. That hasn't worked out really well for you guys in the last couple of years.
I understand your point there, sir. But let's just not forget, we have the best goalie in hockey. He keeps us in it every night. Schedule's very difficult, but we went to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. You know, tough loss to the Devils. I just think that the season's very short. It's been tough to kind of string some games together, but we have a lot of pieces in place. We got some really good talent on this team. There's just going to be a moment where we're going to have that push. And I'm hoping that it's now, but I really think it will happen. I think that we're going to squeak in maybe 7 or 8, and I don't think we're going to do a lot of damage in the postseason, But I think that we're going to win a couple games, and if we have the goaltending that we know Lundqvist can provide, I think we might actually get a series. But definitely not like last year where we were just firing on all cylinders in the team system and going that far. I think maybe one round of the playoffs if that.
Yeah,
you're no New Jersey Devils, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Do you hear him getting all this hatred out? He was crying before because St. Louis has been pumping out goalie prospects, and he was just sitting. You said he was sitting in his room and crying. Why can't the Devils have these goalie prospects?
We've had the best goalie.
They got Halak and Elliott, and I just want to sit in bed with my blankets and cookies.
We've had the best goalie of all time on our roster for the last 15 years.
Are you going to still talk about him in 15 years while he's winning games?
Yeah, I still talk about Scott Stevens, too.
I know you do.
Let's get Ken Danico from the MSG booth.
You're like an Islander fan talking about
Ken Danico. Let's get Scott Stevens down there. Maybe Mike Peluso. So definitely, if you have Mike Peluso, you're making the playoffs. Like, come on, you know that. There's just not grinders like that anymore in the NHL. You know what I was watching the other day? It's always, they'll show these like vintage games, like from '94 Rangers, and you just if you watch hockey from 10, 15 years ago, it is unbelievable the amount of clutching and grabbing and holding that goes on. The game is totally different. I wanted to hear you guys take on that.
You know, I kind of have this theory that once that year long lockout ended, the game that they made was completely tailored around how Ovechkin and Crosby play.
Right.
Because if you had those same rules, you're playing with the same exact rules. Say there's no lockout. Crosby and Ovechkin get drafted. They're on the Caps. And pens respectively, regardless. Tell me that if you didn't have those same rules, both of them would not be as effective as they are today. I'm not saying they wouldn't be bad players. I'm saying that they wouldn't be as effective as they are.
No, there's no way. Especially when the stick is parallel to the ice, they're calling that every single time. That was a mainstay in the NHL. I mean, Darian Hatcher made a career of hooking people. And there's just no... There's just no defensemen like that anymore that are just, you know, they can't really skate, but, you know, well, you get by because you can play the game well. There aren't people like that anymore. Everybody's athletic. I think the level of play is much better. I think it's better off. I think their game is more tailored to it.
For sure.
If they hadn't made those rules, the Devils would have had three more championships, and we would have been the greatest.
No, you would have been. I don't know.
Yeah, the Devils would have benefited because that's all they do.
Scott Gomez would have scored more goals.
Oh, my God, Scott Gomez.
Did Scott Gomez score, Dak?
Scotty Gomez, man.
That was good. Been scoring
Ryan
goals.
I think that worked out pretty well for us. My God.
Now, real quick, we've got about 7 or so minutes left, about 6 minutes, sorry.
I got some inside little, you can get to your point in 1 second. I've got some little inside juice for you. I actually know this lady who I used to.
Is she a nice lady?
Who was hanging out with Scott Hartnell and Giroux and some of the other players at a local bar in Philly. Apparently in Philly, you know, all the athletes, they go out and pubs and bars where like regular people go, unlike the city where, you know, everybody goes to a private club like 4040 and whatnot. And she was just saying how much of a a-hole Scotty Hartnell was, that he was just groping people and how he was such a booze hound. I thought that was kind of funny. I throw that in there.
I could totally see him just being that annoying, friggin' weird guy at the end of the bar.
What do you think Jeff Carter and Mike Richards used to do? Why do you think they were so successful in Philadelphia?
Yeah, but at least they were pulling dimes. Tell me Hartnell's not like the kind of guy that you'd come across and be like, oh, I think you smell funny. You look weird and you smell.
Yeah, I'm not sure. He's got the whole jungle thing going. I don't know. But no, he's not a bad hockey player though. I mean, he does play a little chippy, but he's adjusted. Yeah, he's not a bad hockey player though. I'll give you that.
I'll give him that for sure. Real quick, I want to touch on the West. Like I said, we got about 5 minutes left. I just want to touch on the West, and I want to give out 3 stars from last week. The West, it's obviously you have Chicago and Anaheim in the top 2 spots. Chicago, who actually just made a move for Hanzus today, probably going to plug him in as a third-line center, which is good. Really solidifies their top 3 lines behind Taves and Bolin. Then you have Minnesota, and they're in a dogfight with Vancouver for that top spot in the Pacific or in the Northwest. I think they'll squeak it out, but I think that they need to shore up their defense a little bit, as Chris mentioned earlier in the year. They made some really good acquisitions, but they have a really thin blue line, so I'd like to see what they do going forward with that. And then you have my 4 through 8 is going to be Vancouver, Los Angeles, St. Louis, San Jose, and I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I think Columbus makes a push and makes the playoffs this year.
Wow.
I think Edmonton makes – I think Detroit's out. I think it's going to be St. Louis, Edmonton, and Columbus.
You think so, yeah?
Yeah.
You don't think San Jose's going to make it?
No, I think the final three I think the final three are St. Louis, Edmonton, and Columbus.
I could see that. If you think about it, San Jose is only going to go as far as Niemi wants to take them. And with that, I'm going to make a nice little loophole into this week's 3 stars. Mac Rye, who do you have?
Well, I got the 3 callers. I got Noxie, Lufa, and Chandler. I appreciate you guys coming out and giving us a little chat. So those are my 3 stars for the week. You know, new Tuesday edition at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. I just shout out from the West Coast. Just want to say thank you so much. So,
thank you.
You're such a sweetheart, Chris. You know that?
You know me.
Such a sweetheart. Wow. That really touched me. That really touched my heart a little bit.
Yeah. Chris, I'm watching Dancing of the Stars right now. I wish you were on TV. I could really appreciate you right now.
You know me, my little two-step.
On a more serious note than Chris McRae Dancing with the Stars, my top 3 stars of the week, they're going to go to Loophole, Niemi, and I'm going to have to say Nazem Kadri, because him and Loophole together have been unbelievable, and I don't need to hear it from you, Chris, because I know he's on your fantasy team.
Number one seed in the playoffs, see me.
Yo, Kadri, yeah. I'm telling you, Kadri, that kid is birthed on the scene. He has some unbelievable hands. And dropping Loopholes.
He's unreal, and he's playing Loopholes.
He's really
great.
Just got so much more confidence, and he's really just turned his career around. I mean, because he, you know, when he was, you know, before he came to the Maple Leafs, he was, you know, pretty much a second line, you know, player, you know, grinder, and he's really turned himself into a nice scorer.
For sure. My second star is Niemi, 2 shutouts this week. Like I said before, the Sharks will only play as well as Niemi is playing, and Lupo and Kadri just playing unbelievable hockey. We are coming up on about 1 minute left in the show. Lufa, I appreciate the call. Thanks for calling in, buddy. I love the input. Hopefully we can have you back next week.
Yeah, I'd love to. That was fun, guys. Thanks a lot for having me.
For sure. Don't forget, 8 o'clock on Tuesdays now, no longer Mondays. Thanks for coming by, bud.
Yeah,
thanks,
no
man.
Problem, dude.
And Chandler as well. I always appreciate the knowledge you bring to the table. It's second to none. Love having you call in, and hopefully you'll be back next week.
Hello?
Chandler?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry, I was watching this Buffalo-Pittsburgh game. Yeah, I appreciate being on with you guys, man. I really do. Thanks a lot.
No problem. He's a man of his work. All right, thanks for calling in, man.
All right, buddy.
Well, Chris, this leaves us with one more thing to do. Do you know what that is?
Play that song, man.
I just have to find it. Every time I try to find it, it's always gone.
It knows it wants to play.
What's that?
I said it knows it wants to come on, though, so you'll find it.
Oh, got that. On behalf of Sports City Chefs, Icebox, and my co-host Chris McRae, hockey guru, hockey genius, thank you for helping me out with the show. I'm Charlie Pavarini. You can find me on Twitter at CPavarini89. Find me on Facebook, Charlie Pavarini, the old guy, is my dad. I'm sure some of you have found that out by now. Call in next week.